Tomorrow night on ESPN, the WNBA draft will be live with Oregon Sabrina Ionescu, set to become the number one pick of the New York Liberty. New York has five picks in round one, so you'll see who will join her this coming season. It's tomorrow night, 7 Eastern on ESPN and on the ESPN app. All right, here are some more really, really extraordinary items and experiences you can bid on as part of the all-in challenge to raise money for charities during the pandemic. You can bid on a package from Tom Brady to attend the Buccaneers home opener. You will get a game-worn jersey and cleats and have dinner or a workout with Tom Brady. That's unbelievable. You can also enter to win a chance to play in the NBA's All-Star Celebrity Game. It includes VIP access to attend All-Star Weekend's events. It is a spectacularly good time. I can tell you I've been involved with that twice, and it's an unforgettable experience. How about Matthew McConaughey posting a contest to win a Texas football experience? The winner will attend a Longhorns football game in McConaughey's box with his friends and his family. It is all part of the All-In Challenge, where you can donate and can bid to be a part of all of this. It's at allinchallenge.com, providing food to those in need. A wonderful gesture, and again, wonderful opportunities here during this time. And we are so delighted you've chosen to get up with us on ESPN this morning. Really busy hour coming your way. You're going to hear from Michael Jordan and much more. It's our job to give you an hour of entertainment, and that is what we're going to do starting right now. It's time to get up with Tua. 1 week from tonight, we find out the truth. Right now, there's new information on the one thing every team agrees upon. We'll talk about that and more. Mel Kiper joins us right off the top. Then, overnight, Vegas releases over-under win totals for every NFL team. How many do you think they've given a Tampa Tom? You'll find out in less than 10 minutes. And Michael, Jeffrey, Jordan, plenty to say about Last Dance and his legacy. You'll hear it directly from him in this hour of Get Up, which starts right now with Get Up and Go. Rams center Brian Allen has told Fox Sports that he tested positive for COVID-19 last month. Allen is the first active NFL player to publicly announce that he has tested positive for the virus. Elsewhere, the Washington Post is reporting that among the many contingencies the NFL is considering includes plans to potentially shorten the season or play in either empty or partially filled stadiums. Much will depend on what other sports do. Speaking of other sports, baseball's commissioner Rob Manfred telling the AP that the league must, quote, turn over every stone to try to play games in 2020. That, of course, is contingent on government and health officials giving the go-ahead. UFC, our Brett Okamoto reporting that Justin Gaethje and Henry Cejudo have both verbally agreed to their respective bouts on the targeted May 9th UFC card. The location of that potential event is yet to be determined. And back to the NFL, nearly a month after the Texans and Cardinals agreed to a trade involving DeAndre Hopkins and David Johnson, the trade was finally made official yesterday. Both players have passed physicals for their new teams. All right, to our top story. We're officially 1 week away from the start of the NFL draft, and we will find out which team will roll the dice on Alabama quarterback Tua Tagovailoa. If you've been paying attention, you know that Mel Kiper has dropped Tua down a spot to number 6 in his latest mock draft, which would make him the third quarterback off the board, at least according to Mel, behind Joe Burrow and Justin Herbert. Now, our draft predictor, which is our analytics department, still has the number 3 pick overall as the overwhelming likeliest spot for Tua. Take a look at that, a 45% chance that he winds up at 3, and none of the rest of them are even as high as 20%. And so I wanted to get Mel back into the conversation this morning and try and get to the bottom of that, and he is here with us with Lewis and Booger as we are jam-packed this morning. Mel, good morning. So you're telling us what you're hearing from teams. Again, I want to make it clear, this is not your projection on the players, but what you're hearing from teams. But our analytics still think the likeliest spot for him is 3. How do you figure those two things?
Don't know. It depends who you talk to. Obviously, you know, different feelings for different people. It's 32 teams in this league. Greeny, obviously 31 teams that you talk to. You don't talk to all 32. If you're lucky enough to talk to 30, and I don't think anybody does, or 5 or 10, you know, that's what you do. You get that handful to build a consensus. And I think you look at where we are right now with Tua, to trade up, knowing the concern about long-term, even short-term durability, would be a surprise to me. Now, had we had a perfect process, everybody would have been at their doctors, be with Tua, maybe that could have happened. But the way it is right now, I think the chances of a trade up are at least minimal compared to what it would have been had we had, as I say, that normal draft process.
Can we talk about that video that we showed that he released and we talked about earlier this morning here, and you're seeing it on your screen right now. How significant is that video? What did you hear from the people who will be making these decisions about what they're seeing on this tape?
encouraging. Nice to see. Everybody's rooting for two, and it's not like he's falling into the third round here, Green. We're talking about one pick, so it's not that big a concern if you go six to the L.A. Chargers. It was just one team deciding to go with a quarterback who's got a ton of talent ahead of him, who comes into the process clean. So, and some think he'll drop further than that. I don't, but there are some that said, hey, everybody's kind of doing their due diligence, thinking, hey, he could be dropping into the teens, and maybe then you can jump up there. You know, it always brings up New England because of the connection, obviously, there with Bill Belichick and Nick Saban. So we'll see. Everybody's got every opinion. As I said, nobody's talking to 30, 31, 32 teams, Grinny. Nobody is. Nobody is. They have their handful of teams they talk to. They build a consensus from those teams, and everybody's teams probably are different. So that's why it's great. That's the element of the draft that makes it so fascinating that until Thursday night, April 23rd, we really don't know, because guess what? Miami and the Chargers aren't telling anybody exactly what they're doing.
I hear you. No, the thing about it that I find most interesting, and I think most would, is that everyone seems to agree that Tua is a better prospect than Herbert. So if Herbert goes ahead of Tua, then injury clearly is the reason why. Booger, I haven't heard from you yet today. Let's hear this from you. What is your sense of what you've seen from the young man? Obviously, you followed him closely at Alabama. Your projection for him going forward and the notion that he might fall behind Justin Herbert in this draft.
Well, to me, that's crazy, Greeny. I think when you look at what it takes to play quarterback, you talk about accuracy, decision-making, and timing, and also the intangibles. All those things Tua Tagovailoa brings to the table, and I get it. Some people are scared with the injury concerns, but Chip Kelly told me this once. When you play in the National Football League, it's not if you get hurt, it's when you get hurt. And Tua is a young guy. He's going to get hurt. It's part of the game. Look at all the quarterbacks in the National Football League. They've been hurt. They're going to get hurt. It's just about how you recover and can you prevent some of those injuries. And for people to say, I'm going to take Justin Herbert over Tua Tagovailoa, the gap between those two, to me, is astronomical. It's like an ocean. Tua is much better at all the things that it takes to play the quarterback position. And I get it. Herbert has the ideal size. He's big. He's mobile. But when you talk about being able to lead a team and do what the quarterback position requires to be done for your football team, throw it accurately, make good decisions, take care of the football, the ability to anticipate throws, Tua Tagovailoa does that better than almost anyone except Joe Burrow in this draft. And if you're taking Herbert before him, you're making a huge mistake.
That's really interesting. So, Lewis, let's go to you here. You'll be on one of the big chairs on our draft, and obviously you were a person who's been in the rooms where these decisions are getting made. Do you see the difference in your projection of the two players as being that significant, that wide of a gap between Tua and Justin as Booger does?
Yeah, I absolutely do. I think he's a much better passer. Look, he played in a different offense with much better weaponry that was able to showcase all of Tua's skills. And I think he's much further along in his development than Justin Herbert. I find it interesting, though, that Booger said, you know, he's much further along than everybody except Joe Burrow. Yeah, okay, come on. Don't be too much of a homer there, Booger. But, you know, I love you anyway. And, you know, I'm one of those people who believe that those guys are pretty tight anyway. I mean, those guys are very close anyway. But, yeah, Greeny, I definitely feel as though Tua, as far as decision-making, accuracy, horsepower in his arm, the ability to play with touch, to ability to play in a pro-style offense, whether it be operating under center, in the gun, I mean, he can do it all. He really can. I mean, the whole conversation around Tua and Justin Herbert really right now is a function of mitigating and eliminating risk and whether or not you will be held accountable if you take him before a guy like Justin Herbert and he gets hurt. Are you going to be held accountable, and are you going to be one of those people who winds up having people in your organization say, see, I told you you should have never taken him? And on the flip side, if you don't take him and he winds up being great, are you going to be held accountable in this way? Like, did you overblow all of these injury concerns? And that's why I said before, being in alignment with ownership on down on this pick is absolutely critical. If you have ownership's backing and everyone in the organization understands that when you take him, he's yours. For better or for worse, he's yours. Whether he busts or he winds up being a Hall of Famer, he's yours. Then, hey, do what you got to do. Don't worry about it. Just trust your doctors, rely on your doctors, and go for it. Because I've had trainers and I've had medical people tell me, we're not really that concerned. It's whether or not you have the kind of alignment necessary in order to take him. Simple as that.
Mel, let me come back to you here, because, again, it's important to point out that what you're telling us in your mock draft is what you think you're hearing from people, but it's not your projections of the players. You have Tua on your board ahead of Herbert. How much ahead? What is the difference between the two as far as you're concerned?
It's not significant, but it's enough to say Tua. But it's easy for me, who's not in the league, to say I'm going to take Tua. Knowing what you know, you can roll the dice easily on the talent and say he's a little bit better than Justin Herbert, whatever. Bottom line is, and I disagree with Boogle on this, quarterbacks are iron men in the league. Quarterbacks play a long time without getting hurt. Tom Brady had the one injury. Think about Phillip Rivers, Eli Manning. I give you a ton of names. John Elway, go back to Dan Marino, Jim Kelly. They play forever. They don't get hurt. Quarterbacks will stay out there. They might have a freak injury here and there for 1 year, but they're not consistently hurt. The quarterbacks, and Todd brought this up. Todd McShay did about 2 months ago. It was a great point that quarterbacks that were in college and had injuries had had injury moving forward in the NFL. Drew Brees didn't have a college injury. He had an injury once he was in the league. So I think it has gone from college to the NFL with several quarterbacks, a list of quarterbacks, and that's why Tua, the injuries are a concern.
You know what, guys? Mark Eisman, my producer, I'm going to stay on this. I don't want to leave this here. Booger, that is an important point to be made here, that yes, everyone is going to get banged up in the league at one point or another, but how much would the history of injury with Tua, and it is significant, how much would that concern you if you had to bet your kids' college tuition someday on this pick at the top of this draft?
Greeny, realizing the importance of the position and realizing how hard it is to hit on the position, I would still be willing to bet because of some of the traits that I've seen on the collegiate level. And the thing that I would say to Mel is, yeah, these guys may not be injury prone, but my point being is you are going to get hurt at some point. The greatest of all time, Tom Brady, tore an ACL. So injuries are a part of the game. I wouldn't be scared of a freak injury like a hip. It's not something that happens often. Everyone is concerned about the ankle injury. He basically had two high ankle sprains, and Alabama could not wait for him to heal, so they did the tightrope procedure. I get it. It's part of the game. I would be more concerned about the things that it takes to play the position that the other quarterbacks don't bring. Tua brings all the intangibles. What do we talk about with Cam Newton? Accuracy, the ability to throw the football and put it pinpoint where your receiver can catch the football. You don't have to worry about that with Tua Tagovailoa. So there are stars in the National Football League that cannot do what Tua is already doing on the collegiate level. That's why I would be willing to roll the dice, Greeny.
All right, I want to get two more quick questions in here. Mel, the first one is for you. Mm-hmm. If you're not worried about the medical, if you are a team that is not worried about the medicals, do you project Tua better than Burrow? Let's take Herbert out of the conversation. Do you project Tua as the best quarterback in this draft if the medical is something you're totally comfortable with?
I don't think you can, because the medical, even if you're comfortable with it, you can't be comfortable that there's a guarantee he's going to be healthy, because it does, as I say, go from college to pro with those injuries moving forward. And then Burrow has not had that. Burrow had such a great year. It would be hard. Even if Tua had had no injuries and Burrow had the year he did, you could still make an argument Tua. But I bring up the four first-round receivers. I bring up the great right tackle, left tackle, running backs that are around him, okay, and the kind of the talent around the quarterback. But I think Burrow's year was so spectacular, Greeny, that to say that Tua would have been automatically ahead of him, it's easy to do, but it would have been a lot more complicated had it been real. But I think the injuries are there. They are something that teams are concerned with. And it's not about coming back from the hip. It's about moving forward, being durable, and being that Iron Man at quarterback that most of the great ones have been able to do. Outside of a one-year injury here and there, go back to a 15-year career. How much? Look at all the hits Russell Wilson's taken. Has he ever had any significant injury? So, again, these quarterbacks are expected to be out there game after game, year after year. And in college, not the NFL, Tua has not been able to do that.
And, Lewis, very quickly, I've got like 15 seconds here. But just to be clear, when you say you all need to be in line, in the, is that essentially, are you telling me you're going to go to the owner of the team, your boss, and say, listen, if I take this guy and he gets hurt, I need you to tell me you're not going to fire me. Is it literally that simple?
Well, in essence, yeah, it is. But I'll tell you this. When you're picking up this high and you're picking a franchise quarterback, I can guarantee you this. The owner is going to be sitting – well, in normal situations, the owner would be sitting right next to you. He would be right there on this pick, and you would be discussing this, and you would have to make sure, especially given to a situation that we're all in agreement that, look, we're going to roll the dice here as far as his injury is concerned, because we know as far as how he plays the game on the football field, we believe he's the best quarterback coming out in this draft.
Guys,
no question about it.
Can I say one thing, Greeny?
Yeah, real quick. Now go real quick.
Real quick. The one thing you can reconcile if you're Miami or the Chargers is without the injuries, he wouldn't have been there at 5 or 6 for the Chargers. They would have had to either trade up and give up draft capital or not see him there at all. So that's the way you can reconcile it to your owner if he did get hurt. Say, hey, we wouldn't even have been looking at Tua at 5 or 6 had it not been for the concern about the injury.
It's the most interesting thing in this draft, without question. We'll all find out a week from tonight. Guys, thank you very much. I'll take a quick break. Coming up, aside from enormous talent, there was one thing that made Michael Jordan dominant. It was his will to win. You'll hear all about it from him. later in this hour of Get Up ESPN.
GEICO has the insurance industry leading app that lets you manage your policy anytime, anywhere. Which means that GEICO is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you. Like animal control, when you're cornered in your garage by an angry possum.
Hi, me again. You guys said you would be here about an hour ago, and I think the possum is starting to get angry. Listen, I thought if I fed it, it would go away, but now it is ripping holes in the drywall and making some sort of nest. Just call me back.
GEICO, always there for you with savings and the industry-leading mobile app.
Foot odor throwing you off your game? Stick to a winning game plan with Odor Eaters, featuring three advanced odor and wetness fighters. The lineup provides long-lasting odor control plus more to keep your feet on their game.
Odor Eaters powder provides outstanding moisture control. Clear drying spray is the MVP in preventing athlete's foot, while insoles work continuously to manage wetness while adding a layer of comfort. Pick up today at Walmart, Target, CVS, Dollar General, or other fine retailers.
Odor Eaters. Destroy foot odor with the best in odor defense.
Back on Get Up with some news we're about to make for you here. He is arguably the best foreign-born prospect who is in all of the mock drafts right now. His name is Denny Avdia. He plays in Israel. He's a 19-year-old guard forward. He would be the third Israeli-born player to be selected in the first round of the NBA draft, if indeed he is in this NBA draft. He is currently projected by our experts, Gavoni and Schmitz, to be the sixth pick in the draft to the New York Knicks. That is, of course, if he decides that he wants to go into the NBA draft. So let's find out. Denny Avdia is good enough to join us live this morning from Israel, where it is not morning, but we are delighted to have you. Denny, I'm told you have an announcement to make about where you plan to play basketball next season.
Yes, I'm very proud and excited to announce that I submitted my name this morning for the 2020 NBA draft.
Fabulous. Tell me what went into that decision. Why did you decide this was the time for you to come to America and play here?
First of all, the NBA is the best league in the world. There's a lot to learn over there and a lot of experience there. And I think it will be great to take my my game to the next level.
Now, many of the people watching our show in America right now probably don't know much about basketball in Israel. What can you tell us about the game there? How big is the sport of basketball in your home country?
I mean, basketball is the biggest thing over here. I mean, the fans here are great. Great atmosphere in all of the games. Sometimes the crowd can be super loud. You can barely even hear the coach. But it's fun to play over here. Great competition and great clubs.
Who is your favorite NBA player? Of whom are you the biggest fan here in the States?
Wow, it's hard. I mean, there's a lot of talented guys, and I like to see a lot of guys eat every night. But I'll probably say I'm just taking from each player something good he does, and just. It's not the specific player that I really, really like. It's just, I just am watching good players.
Well, who for those who've not seen your game, who do you consider yourself similar to? Whose game is similar in the NBA to yours?
Listen, I'll tell you honestly, I don't like to be compared to anybody. I think each player has his own path. And each player has his own skills and things he does good. And I think I just want to be the best Denny I can be. I just don't want people to compare me to anybody. I respect everybody, but I just want to be me. I just want to play my game. I want to do the best I can, and we'll see how it goes.
Now, fair enough. What do you know about the circumstances of your being able to get here? We obviously are living through extremely complicated times in a variety of ways. What plans do you have to get to America? What do you know about what you'll be able to do and when?
Listen, I still don't know a lot of things. It's still early, but I just know when all of this situation will end. I'll talk with my people, and I have a good amount of people around me that knows what's best for me, and we'll decide. We'll do the best thing that will fit me.
All right, again.
I still don't know.
Projected by our experts to go sixth in this draft to the New York Knicks. Denny Avdia in Israel announcing live here on Get Up, you are coming to the NBA and will be in this draft this coming year. Denny, congratulations. Thank you for doing this. Stay healthy, and we look forward to seeing you here in the United States.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Denny Avdia on his way to the NBA. Maybe someday he'll take part in a game of horse with other NBA legends. We have that tonight on ESPN. The semifinals of our horse challenge have Chauncey Billups taken on Mike Conley and Allie Quigley taking on Zach LaVine. The championship matchup will immediately follow. It's tonight, 9 Eastern on ESPN and on the ESPN app. All right, coming up, aside from talent, Michael Jordan had such great will to win. Where did that come from? He answers that question and more. You'll hear it all from him as we continue on Get Up, and a very special guest. Oh, look who's coming back. One of my favorites. Herman is ready to go live. Coach Herm, right after this, Get Up on ESPN.
GEICO gets you access to licensed agents 24/7, which means that GEICO is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you. Like your mom, when you fill out really, really important paperwork on the first day of a new job.
Name, check. Birthday. Social security, is that a thing? Hey, Mom, what is my social security number? Mom? Okay, let's guess. 0017. Oh, Gemini. Hashtag done.
GEICO, always there for you with savings and 24/7 access to licensed agents.
We are back on Get Up, and Herman Edwards is the definition of a football lifer, a great playing career in Philadelphia where he never missed a practice, much less a game. A long career as a scout in the NFL and then an assistant coach and the head coach of both the Jets and the Chiefs. Then a great stint as an analyst for us here at ESPN and now the head coach of the Arizona State University Sun Devils. And I've said many times during complicated times in my life, one of the first places I always turn for advice is to my friend Herman Edwards, who's good enough to get up early with us here this morning. Herman, first and foremost, we hope you and your family are well. Thank you for spending some time with us this morning.
You as well, Greeny, and to all those first responders, those folks that are helping battle this virus that we're dealing with right now all over the world, especially in New York, you know, being a part of the family of working there, you know, you take your hats off to them, and you're always praying for those folks because they are truly, truly the heroes when you think about heroes right now.
No question. There are so many really important things I want to ask you about, and we will in a few minutes. But let me go through a couple of football questions while I have you, because a lot of the conversation here this week has been about Justin Herbert, the quarterback from Oregon, who now Mel is projecting to go ahead of Tua in the draft next week. And you faced him in a very high-profile game late in the season. Give us your scouting report on Justin Herbert.
Has all the attributes you're looking for, size, talented arm strength, the ability to place the ball in tight windows. I thought you saw his athleticism in the Rose Bowl when he actually took off and ran. We've been very fortunate. We played him twice. This year we beat him here, close game. The previous year we played him up there and lost by about 3 points. But very talented player. I heard the comments earlier when the guys were discussing quarterbacks, and a lot of good things said on the behalf of all those guys. Understand this, though, and this is just, you know, me. I just get to the matter of fact. If you don't have a quarterback, you get fired. If you pick one and it doesn't work out, you get fired. So you better pick one, because if he hits, you know, you don't have to do like me and go on television. So here you go.
That wasn't so bad. Yeah.
Hey, Brady, I mean, it was great. It was great working with you guys. But I'm just telling you, you know, when you sit here and they start arguing, if you don't have a guy, you're going to get fired. So you might as well pick one, because at least you got a chance to keep your job and win games.
Fair enough. Every time you had a healthy quarterback, your teams were in the playoffs. So let's then talk about a quarterback that we wonder if he can get healthy. You've obviously seen plenty of Tua Tagovailoa. If you were up there and you needed a quarterback in this draft, what would you do?
Well, you're going to pick one, and obviously they're both talented, and I'm not going to sit here and say who I'm going to pick. I will tell you this, Greeny. They're all system needy. What system will you allow this guy to perform in? It can't be your system as a coordinator so much. When you develop a system around the quarterback, we saw that in Los Angeles with that quarterback that plays now, Jared Goff, right?
Yeah.
First couple years, he struggled. All of a sudden, the system is kind of built around him. Pretty good quarterback, right? Andy Reid has a very talented quarterback in Kansas City. It's not so much the pro system. It's a system that the quarterback can flourish in. So what are you willing to do as a coordinator to help this quarterback be successful in the league? And that's the key. You got to build it around his skill level. And if you don't do that, you're going to run into trouble.
That's fair. One more thing I want to ask you about before we get down to some of the more important stuff. You were the head coach of the Jets, so in the AFC East when Tom Brady first became Tom Brady, as we know him, in New England. What was your reaction to him leaving?
I was a little surprised. You know, this is Captain America. I mean, all of a sudden when Captain America leaves, it's like, really? He left? You know, and I was going to tell him, I said, look, if you wanted to go sit on the boat in Tampa, I used to work there. I got a free pass. I mean, but all of a sudden he leaves. So it's kind of interesting. You know, 20-year run will go down in history as one of the best quarterbacks to ever play, obviously, him and Bill as a coach as well. But it's interesting. I guess for him it's a new start. It's a new chapter. Maybe it's a way to challenge himself. I don't know. Bruce Arians is a good friend of mine, head coach. I know Bruce has been – he does a great job with quarterbacks. This will be interesting. Think about that conference now, all the quarterbacks, Drew Brees and this guy. I mean, this is going to kind of be interesting in that conference.
Right there, even in the division, Matt Ryan is there as well with Teddy Bridgewater.
Yes.
Okay, let's get down to business, Herman, because here's what I really wanted to talk to you about today. You're now coaching on the college level, and we all understand we are living through unusual times. I have a daughter in college. She's home right now taking her classes online, as they are from everywhere. So in your view as a coach, what happens if we get to the fall and the students are not on campus and the football season's supposed to start? What should we do?
Well, if the students aren't on campus, that tells you that we basically don't have a cure for the disease right now. And I think everyone's, you know, we have all these scientists and things of that nature testing and trying to find a vaccine for this. That would be interesting. You know, I said this before. If the students aren't on campus and we feel they're not safe, then the question I have to ask, well, if, you know, they're not safe, are the players safe? And, you know, this is a sport that we play. It's not a social distancing sport, by the way. Last time I checked, if you are a social distancing football team, you're not going to win many games, by the way. This is a game built on contact. Now, they're not saying that you can't play, but it'd be very interesting. I think safety matters in this. And, you know, I said this all along, Greeny. I think going forward, us as Americans and just all over the world, I mean, we got to trust our hopes and not our fears. And we got to understand we're all on the same team right now. And it doesn't matter where you live. We're all on the same team. We got to respect our neighbors now. That's what this thing's about. And we got to get to grip. We got to come to grips with this is not normal. Okay. You know, I live this way every day. You know, the unexpected is always going to happen. That's what I always think about. That's what you think about as a coach. You know, what the unexpected, then what are you going to do? Well, we got to find a way to be on the same page and listen to the game plan of the doctors. That's the game plan. It's not our personal game plan. You know, we can't be a selfish player now as citizens. We have to all be on the same team and respect each other. I think that's very important.
Well said. You know, you and I have talked so many times about your experiences coaching the Jets during the aftermath of September 11th, which was obviously a different circumstance than this is. But there are some similarities, at least in the way that we think of sports and the way that sports might be a part of everyone coming back together again. What lessons do you think you learned from those experiences that feel important to you now?
How important America really is to all of us. And our ability to unite together, our ability to come together and understand that, you know what, we're a family. This is the United States of America. And I say that, and this is a world that pandemic, you know, that's what it is. It's all over the world. We get it. But it brought our country closer together. I can remember when we finally came back to play against the New England Patriots, there was not a dry eye in the stadium. There was not a dry eye. When those guys ran out there with that American flag, boy, that was unbelievable. That was unbelievable. I can remember telling my team before we went out on the field, I said, guys, I don't know how we're going to play. I don't know what's going to happen because we were still emotionally involved in this thing because we were so close to it. I said, just go have fun and play. Just play free. Just go play football.
And what sorts of lessons do you hope your players now, what message of that sort will you give them when they come back? And what lessons do you hope that the young men that you are trying to teach, not only to be better football players, but to be better people, what lessons do you hope they take from all this?
Well, I hope they think that, you know, every day we wake up is a blessing and we take a lot of things for granted. This is the time to reflect, just reflect on your life and understand that all of a sudden this thing has come about upon us, and how we react going forward, I think, is very important. But you know what, Greeny, when you think about our world, we live in a noisy world, right? It's very quiet now. Mm. We're not used to quiet. And I think when quiet comes, we got to reflect on our lives and be thankful for the days that we're here. You know, we just take it for granted. Every day we're going to get up. You know, it's going to be good. Well, you know, all of a sudden it's still good, but it's different. And I think it gives you a lot of you got to do some soul searching now and prioritize your life and reflect on your life. I've been blessed, Greeny. I really have. You have as well. I couldn't imagine without the great game of football, me traveling and seeing things and be able to support my family and do things that I'd never imagined because of the great game of football. And you said it earlier. I'm a lifer. I'm indebted to the game of football. I really am. It has given me everything I could imagine and more. And the people that have helped me along the way. And the greatest thing about the sport of football and sports in general, whether it's the fans or the players that are involved in sports, there's this huddle. There's this massive huddle that comes together from all walks of life, whether you attend the game or if you're in the huddle, right? And there's this respect everyone has for each other. It breaks all barriers. It's a wonderful thing. It's an opportunity for all those folks to come together and go into a stadium from different neighborhoods, from different walks of life, and go, okay, we're all voting for our team. We're pulling for our team today. And the players the same way, all different walks of life, they walk in the huddle and say, we need each other. We're a team. We can't be selfish. I think if we can live with those principles outside the huddle when we break the huddle, we'll be a lot better off.
So well said. Herman, I can't tell you how much it means to me that you got up early this morning and did this. Thank you. Please stay safe and stay healthy, and we will see you soon. Thank you so much, Herman.
Thank you, my friend. God bless you now.
To you, too. It's great to see him anytime. Again, one of the first places I turn for advice under any circumstances in my life. As we continue, college football is weighing options for next year. No fans, pushing the season back. We'll discuss the right way for this to be taken care of. As we continue, Get Up on ESPN.
Geico knows there are many reasons why you ride. From the camaraderie of the other bikers, a band of brothers, always there for you, rain or shine, to the amazing savings you get with Geico on your motorcycle insurance and accessories coverage all year round. But for Bucky Hornhill, it was one reason in particular.
It was my helmet hair. I was born with helmet hair. I've tried to cut it a bunch of times, even buzzing it, but it immediately just goes back to helmet hair.
Geico Motorcycle. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more.
We're back with some news this morning. The PGA Tour has announced plans to return in mid-June with a revised slate of events that run through Thanksgiving. The first of them is the Charles Schwab Challenge in Fort Worth, Texas, which is scheduled for June 11th through the 14th, assuming that health and government officials allow. It would be played at a Colonial Country Club without spectators. It's been rescheduled from its original late May date. And you take a look here at some of the other events that are planned. That PGA Championship would be there in early August. It would be the first of this year's majors scheduled to be played. The U.S. Open, for the moment, has been rescheduled to September, still at Wingfoot. And then, as you are probably aware, the Ryder Cup still scheduled. And then the Masters could be played this year in November if they're able to do it based upon the pandemic. Okay, the highly anticipated 10-part documentary series The Last Dance debuts on Sunday, capturing the last of the six Michael Jordan Bulls championship seasons. Michael joined Robin Roberts and Good Morning America earlier this morning talking about where he got his will to win.
My parents. My father worked at General Electric for years. He was trying to provide for his family. He moved all over, southern North Carolina. My mom worked for a bank. She worked for Corning Glass. I mean, they were hardworking people. And they instilled that in not just me, but my brothers and sisters. So, I mean, and I just lived vicariously through them and lived and learned it from them. And you know, it just became a part of my nature, you know, and I always look at a negative and turn it into a positive. You know, fortunately, things like that happens in our life. And as I try to teach my kid, you know, just take that negative, learn from it, and turn it into a positive. And that all came from my parents.
Yeah. And oh, and you were keeping up with your brothers as well. We learned that in the docuseries that they, you're a tight-knit family. And they really, really, you guys pushed each other to be the very best. And that's certainly
what you are. Well, I wouldn't be here.
I
wouldn't be here if it, I wouldn't be here if it wasn't for my brother Larry. I mean, you know, Larry pushed me and we used to fight after every game, but through that fight, you know, emerged someone like me, and you know, he's right next to me. You know, he supports me and he works with me and the team, and yeah, I would have never gotten this far without him.
We're just 3 days away from the debut of The Last Dance, our 10-hour documentary chronicling Michael and the Bulls dynasty through the lens of that final championship season. I've seen the first two episodes. They're sensational, and you will see them Sunday night, 9 Eastern. The uncensored version will be on ESPN and the ESPN app. There is an edited for mature language version that you can watch on ESPN2. And there'll be much more on Michael this morning, more than any individual awards or honors that Michael wanted to win. You'll hear why he thinks that focus had some side effects. They'll be talking about that and more on First Take, which follows us in just a few minutes here on ESPN. We are back and thrilled that you've chosen to get up with us today. It's the beginning of a very busy day on ESPN. Coming up next, First Take, followed by SportsCenter and NFL Live. At 3 o'clock, Rachel Nichols in the Jump. And SportsCenter's back at 5 with the PTI guys joining at 5:30. And we'll cap another day with SportsCenter tonight at 11 Eastern after the NBA Horse Challenge Championship matchup. Okay, as we have been discussing, there are many possibilities being talked about for the upcoming college football season amid the pandemic. Some ideas to surface include playing a shortened season, playing in front of no fans, even possibly pushing the season to the spring. We've moved a bunch of stuff around because we had such a heated and interesting conversation with this group earlier this morning, and we only scratched the surface of some of the subjects. So on your screen, you see Paul Feinbaum, Booger McFarland, and Laura Rutledge, who I'll start with you, Laura. If you could, let's just sort of put on the table for everybody who was not with us an hour ago, what is at stake here for the cancellation of a college football season? What is at stake for everybody involved?
Well, first of all, let's start with the money, because if we're talking about what's really at stake here, it's over $4 billion in revenue for the fiscal year of just the 50 plus public universities in Power Five conferences. So it's even more than that number, but that just talks about the public universities. And when you're looking at revenue and how it's generated in college athletics, so much of it begins with college football. It's more revenue than 35 of the next sports that come behind him, including college basketball, which is much further behind. So obviously football fuels everything. And when you look at college football as opposed to the NFL, in the NFL, maybe about 15 to 16% of their revenue comes from attendance. In college, it's double that, if not more, depending on which institution you're talking about. So it is crucial for these college football games to be played with fans. And that's why right now, as all of these guys are putting their heads together, men and women across college football, college athletics, they're saying, how can we make this work to have fans in the stands so that it's best for not only football and the revenue generated there, but the rest of the sports and the universities as a whole.
Okay, so that's everything that's on the table. Excellent. Paul, let me come back to you then, because the notion of amateurism is something that we and everyone have talked about for such a long time. As far as you're concerned, what hangs in the balance relative to that as these decisions get made?
Well, I think the credibility of the sport hangs in the balance, Mike. If we have a season starting in September or whenever without students on campus or fans in the stands, then there can be no president or commissioner ever stand in front of a group of people again and try to claim that this is amateur athletics. It would be shattered, and you would just have to just go ahead and pay the players and let them play. At least they're taking risk for money as opposed to for the good of good old Notre Dame. Now, the other side of it is if you play with people in the stands and you have to end the season early because the pandemic comes back, then you face the consequences of that. But in some ways, they're damned if they do, if they're damned if they don't. And if you move to spring, you shatter the myth of the normal calendar with basketball.
I'll get to spring in just a second, but Booger, let me just come to you as a former player and a great player at LSU, ultimately a first-round pick in the NFL draft. If you were playing now and they said to you, the schools aren't going to be open, the students aren't going to be there, the fans aren't going to be the stands, but we want you to come out here and play, what would you say?
Why am I here then? Because I'm a student athlete, right? I mean, that's what I'm supposed to be. I'm supposed to be a student athlete, but now I got to come out and play just because everybody wants to fatten their pocket and put the money there. And I get it, guys. I understand the economic impact of football. I get it. It's been a fabric, a part of my life for a long time. But at some point, I just think smarter minds need to understand that, guess what? We're struggling right now from a money standpoint, and we may continue to struggle. And so for all the energy and the time and the effort everybody is putting into what model can we come up with to play football, how about putting that time and energy and effort and coming up with an economic model that if we don't have football, what if football can't be played in the fall? Everybody's painting this doom and gloom picture as if football and collegiate institutions are going to end. That's not the case. We will figure out a way. We are the smartest country in the world. And I just think at some point, from a human safety standpoint, we have to start to get a grip that, guess what? If fans are not in the stands, and Laura, to your point about the attendance and the attendance that can't take place, guess what, guys? We're saving lives. I'll be damned about the money. We are saving lives. And at some point, we have to focus on that and not so much the economic impact that it's having on LSU, Ohio State, or Florida.
That's an important piece in all of this. Obviously, the most important piece. Now, Laura, let me come back to you here because the scheduling then becomes significant because we may be living in a very different world in September than we are in January or in March. We keep hearing the notion that the sport could move its season to the spring. What does that look like?
Well, first of all, I'll just go ahead and say that all of these conference commissioners are trying as hard as they can to make sure that the season starts on time. And I talked to one yesterday who said, look, we're still planning for football to start in the fall, but I think we have to be realistic about this. So let's talk about what that spring schedule would maybe look like. And none of this is being discussed as any sort of hard and fast rule, but this is just an idea. Let's say it begins in February. You get players back on campus sometime around January, and you're able to give them that 6-week time period that most coaches say they would need to get ready. Then you do a shortened season, maybe only conference play, where you go through early May, maybe even a little bit less than that. That allows for bye weeks, the things that you would need to make sure that players would be safe during that time. Then if you are a team that makes it to the college football playoff, the most games you would play would be about 12 games in all of that. And look, one of the main things here is that a lot of these people are saying that way we would know in a full weather cycle, what does the virus do? We would have so much more information by that point, hopefully testing that would be available to masses, hopefully an ability to protect the fans in the stadium, protect first and foremost, the players, the coaches, their health and safety. And that's what they're trying to do. And I'll reiterate one more thing here as we open this up to all the questions that may come through this. They cannot start a season and end it. That would be catastrophic. They also cannot afford for the viability of the sport in the standpoint and other sports long-term. They cannot afford to not have football. If they can do anything possible to have it in this calendar year, in this fiscal year and in this academic year, they're going to be trying to do that. And I think that's where this spring idea really comes into play.
Paul, spring football, you buy it?
No, I don't. I think it's the worst idea I've heard. And I know the desperation to try to get the football season in. But Greeny, there's one thing we really haven't thought about here. We're arguing about fans, classrooms, and attendance. But do we really think that fans are going to come back? I know college football fans are the most fervent in the country. I deal with it every day on what I do. But I have some serious doubt whether college football fans are going to want to sit in a stadium with 110,000 people again. And that's the biggest unknown, I think, of this entire debate.
No question about it. Booger, spring football, obviously, there's a lot to consider. What would you think?
Well, it's a terrible idea, but I do think, to Paul's point, if they do have football, I mean, there's enough alcohol and beer out there where fans are drinking up, they'll come to the stands. But just from an overall standpoint, Greeny, think about this from a spring football scheduling issue. You're going to ask players, 17 to 21 year olds, to play. Let's just say it's a truncated schedule. So 10, 12 games in the spring. We're going to take a couple months off, come back and play another 10, 12 in the fall. 24, 25 games in a calendar year in an era where we're trying to promote player safety. That doesn't work. And let's just look ahead. A guy like Trevor Lawrence at Clemson, Okay, he's supposed to be the number one pick in the NFL draft next year. So if there's going to be spring football, how does that affect him as far as next year's NFL draft? Is the NFL going to change their schedule? How are they going to do it? So there's so many factors that you have to look at, because if I'm Trevor Lawrence and the NFL draft is still going to take place in April, what incentive do I have to come out and play football in February and March and risk getting hurt when there's a draft in April, especially when we see kids sitting out bowl games in January? So there's so many things you have to factor in, Greeny. I think the first thing we have to do is look at the safety of humanity, and then look at the safety of the players. And I think Mark Cuban said it the best. I would not be comfortable putting my players on the court if it's not safe for the fans. And I get it. We all want sports. We need something to talk about. But at some point, let's make sure everyone is safe before we move forward by trying to make money.
Okay, that's well said. And listen, I hope if there's one thing everyone can take from this, it is that there are still a lot more questions than there are answers. But we're doing our best to keep you as up on this as we possibly can. Guys, thank you all. Outstanding work with this. And let's finish it with a smile on our face today. Hashtag rise and shine as we ask you to send us your home videos. And look at that. I hadn't seen that. I'm sorry. I didn't know what was going to happen.
Here's the thing. It's about timing. And the hamstring flexibility. So if you time it up, my hamstrings are flexible enough to make that kick, Greeny.
But the kid just...
I mean, it's the kid in the face.
I'm not concerned about the kid. I'm more impressed with the kick.
The kid just told me it was going to be funny. I didn't know what it was going to be.
Nick Saban just signed.
I mean, who cares about the kid? The kid is just in the way. Look at the dad.
We are out of
Greeny,
time.
Look at the athleticism
we'll
of the dad.
First Take starts now.